This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Oh, you like to think you're a god? Not a god. You're just a parasite. You feed on them.
Welcome everybody to Cinematica Animalia, the podcast where we break down the biology of movie monsters. Today, we are celebrating the successful PhD defense of Dr. Adam Hartsink. I might even pronounce his state's name correctly this time. You never fucking know.
We are going to look at
movie parasites. Some really famous examples of kind of pop culture parasites, whether they are a parasite or not and how cool they are. We'll go over some news first as always, and then we'll get stuck into each kind of movie, on a separate basis. We won't give, too in-depth descriptions of the movies, because most of them I think you'll have seen before with a couple of exceptions. But as always, we'll have time codes down below, for each movie that we're looking at. So if you're a huge fan of, The Thing, the original 1937, I have no idea when it came out. Doesn't really
54,
matter.
54, I think, was the original.
54 was the original. Okay. Thing from Another Planet. Well, big fake out. We're not talking about that one. We're talking about the remake. Which remake? You'll fucking find out.
Starting off aggressive this week.
Yeah, I know. I'm into threatening the audience. We're not getting enough views with me being nice and jovial, so I've gone on the attack.
Jesus.
That's what happens when you turn into doctors, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
But before we get into that, my name's Sam Perrin. I am a freshwater/invasive ecologist and climate data analyst based in Trondheim, Norway. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside Dr. Adam Hartsink.
The crowd goes wild.
a disease/parasite ecologist at the University of Arkansas. Alongside Adam is Libby Young, our story specialist and writer at Short Story Soup. And as every week, we are joined by Dave, who is a vet and our movie physiologist. So, big news this week, very personal. We don't have anything fun to talk about in the environment. But Adam, you are now officially a doctor.
I have my doctorate of philosophy degree, so making me Dr. Adam Hartsink.
Mm-hmm. How did it go?
It went really
We were all listening, so we know, but yeah.
We were there.
Yeah. All the people here and maybe some of the audience members as well were at the defense, so they got to see how that went, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. The private defense, as we were talking about before we started recording, in the US, the system works a bit differently than Europe. I'm not sure about Canada, but you give your talk, your seminar, then you get public questions from the audience for about 15 minutes, and then you go into a closed room with your graduate committee, and they ask you a bit more serious questions.
Ours works the same way.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the UK, it's basically you just sit down in a room with your committee. There's no like public defense or anything, and they just grill you for like 3-4 hours.
Yeah. The postdoc in our lab, he did his PhD in Manchester, and he was talking about he gets to his defense with his committee, and one of his committee members just opens with like, "So your title, like, what is this?" It's like, "Oh God, this is gonna go so well."
No.
And for mine, it wasn't. We got towards like the end of it. And one of my committee members go like, "So yeah, I just have a comment on your title." I'm like, "No, it's happening. No."
Yeah, and how long were you locked in there with them for?
About an hour, hour and a half, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, because we were all getting a little. Because I mean, in the US, it's not quite like. So, for instance, in Norway, nobody can really remember anyone ever failing. In America, right, it's not common, but it does happen sometimes.
If it would happen, it would be a failure of your advisor and not the student themselves. Yeah. By and large, if you're going to defend your dissertation, that means that the committee and your advisor feels that you have achieved the rank of doctor and you should be seen now as a peer. You've gotten the experience you need and the know-how, and you're worthy of the title.
It's more of like a formality to defend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Because there's the graduate student thing is always like, nobody ever fails their thesis, but it's always going through your mind, like, what if I do?
I will be the one person.
Yeah, I'll be the one, yeah. So, and yeah, like, that came back, because you'd been gone for so long, and I was like, fuck it, what's happening here, Libby?
I was trying to give live updates.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an absolute delight reading through those, because I didn't look at my phone for a couple hours, obviously, but seeing the updates from Libby, like, okay, he's in the room. I hear a fart. I hope he's on mute. Oh, my.
You're laughing.
Were you on mute?
I was. Yeah, well, yeah, because they put me in, like, because I had to do my defense over Zoom, so it was all digital, virtual, rather. And I got put in, like, a breakout room while they all discussed things, and then I just, like, blasted one as soon as I went in there, and one of our cats just, like, she popped up in the background. I was like, ma! Very offended.
We can now do the part of the podcast that both Sam and I have been looking forward to, which is congratulations, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Congratulations, Doctor.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome, Doctor.
Yeah, good job, Doctor.
God.
Thank you, Doctor.
All right, bye.
For those of you, for the rest of you listeners, I am a doctor. Dave is a doctor. Sam is also a doctor. Libby is Baroness.
I've chosen my title.
She hasn't inherited any land. She is not in charge of a barony. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe she will be one day.
Yeah, Sealand, right? Have you mm-hmm. thought about that as maybe a birthday present one day? Did I just ruin everything? I have a friend who got that from one of his brothers as a joke. Like, he's officially a Baron of Sealand.
Oh, that's great.
That is great.
Yeah, he was a prick. We called him the Baron. We shouldn't have inflated his ego. Arsehole. Real bad bloke.
So all this time you've been rich?
I'm a Baron, Sam. My family was royalty until your friends destroyed my country.
Anyway, yeah, so because Adam has graduated and... did we say graduated? Defended? Defended. Whatever.
Defended.
Because Adam successfully became a doctor, we thought we'd give him kind of a victory lap on the podcast and talk about some of our favorite movie parasites. Which is, yeah, what we're going to do today. Should we get stuck in?
No, I have some interrupting news that I would Ooh. Like to Ooh, talk
do you?
About.
Okay.
Breaking news from the Baroness.
Uh-huh, breaking news from the Baroness. I wanted to keep this a surprise from all of you, so I'm just going to open this with some statements and see if you can figure it out. So, if you discover gold in Australia, where should you go searching for silver? Anyone? That would be Ag-stralia.
No.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
God damn it.
All right. Should I turn my toothbrush into gold? I might as well.
I'm shaking my head, listeners.
Okay, one more. When I was digging for gold, I banged my knee on a rock, but fortunately, it was only a minor injury. Okay. I say all these delightful puns. Because somebody went a little digging in the archives, another gold joke digging, and this episode happens to be our 50th.
Really?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Is it really?
It Wonderful. Is, as long as the seasons are labeled correctly.
That is a question.
So just not including announcements.
We made it to 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we made it to 50,
boys.
Yeah.
Happy 50th, doctors.
Thank you.
Yes, happy, yes, thank you. I would prefer if you use that correct titles. Yeah.
Good job, doctor.
Thank you, doctor.
Thank you, doctor.
Let's all give ourselves a round of applause.
Good job. Good job, doctor.
Thank you, doctor. You're welcome, doctor.
Thank you, Baroness.
Fine job, gentlemen. You may get out of this yet.
I can't believe this is the same car.
Well, let's not start sucking each other's dicks quite yet.
Right, so before we start looking at the science, if you've got any thoughts or questions, you can find Adam and I on Twitter. I'm at Big Dr. Fishboy. Adam is at Hasik Adam, H-A-S-I-K Adam. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can visit our website, www.cinematicaanimalia.com. Hit us up on Twitter at @C_Animalia or email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. And if you want to read Libby's work, you can visit www.shortstorysoup.substack.com and you can sign up for fortnightly updates. And if you want to hear about some of the more hardcore science that Adam and I write about and a host of other fantastic authors write about as well, I don't shout them out enough, you can check out www.ecologyforthemasses.com.
I think we're on our third year this year for Ecology for the Masses. Did we pass it or we're coming up to our three-year anniversary?
We're coming up on our 3-year anniversary, yeah, and it's, buddy, it's gone very well.
It really has. Yeah. My advisor mm-hmm. actually made a point to mention it during my committee, my private defense of how we've been engaging in science communication because of that, and it's been, you know, a lot of those blogs tend to, a little pat on the back for ourselves here, a lot of those blogs tend to, like, pop up and die after a couple weeks or months as people lose interest, but we've stayed with it, and now we get, like, what, 10,000 visitors a month?
Yeah, we got 13 last month.
That's insane.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's going really well.
13 whole visitors, not 13,000.
Yeah. Okay, but...
Yeah, so like Sam was saying, to celebrate my successful defense of my PhD, because my PhD focused on post-Parasite interactions, we decided to do a little bit of a roundtable discussion of five different, quote, Parasite movies. And I say in quotations because not all of these are Parasites. But we're going to be going through Venom, 28 Days Later, Slither, Alien, so any of the Alien movies, really, and The Thing, which the John Carpenter's The Thing from the 80s with Kurt Russell.
You're not even here, are you? I'm just seeing things, just not real. You're in my head. Because you're just a parasite.
Parasite?
A parasite is an organism that is defined as taking resources or taking energy from another organism, usually without killing it, but it does not give anything back to the host. They tend to be small. They engage in a lot of different kinds of parasitic strategies. You can have castrators, micropredators. It's not quite a symbiont, but you have all of these, and we'll be going over some of those examples today in these episodes, in these movie examples. But our first and foremost one I bring up first, because Venom is not a parasite.
He's a symbiont, right?
Yeah, they always call it the symbiote. So it is. It's one of those weird things where you can maybe have it be considered a parasite because it's a sentient organism that really kind of fucks over the host, depending on who it is in the comics and what movie or version or specific issue you have. But because Venom is not feeding off of whatever host he is on, or it, I don't know if it's even appropriate to gender Venom, but he's always referred to as a he, so I will continue to do so, because it is an alien.
Typical but male.
He gets really insulted in the movie when he gets called a parasite, though, so rightfully so, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's fair. He's also a loser, and he admits that himself.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I kind of, like, I don't think this was a very good movie, but I think it's kind of fun, like...
Agreed.
If only for the soundtrack, where, you know, Venom, 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 Venom.
Oh, yeah.
It's a catchy song.
Forgot about that one.
God. It is quite catchy, yeah.
Yeah, not a great movie, but a really interesting concept of this primordial ooze-type creature coming from space that fuses to a host and is able to hide in their blood or inside their body somehow and then pop out as this exoskeleton-type covering that gives a wearer, like, super strength and speed.
So for those of us who are not doctors in parasites or science, what is a symbiote?
A symbiote is going to be an organism that is living, quote, in harmony with its host. It is providing some kind of benefit to the host, and the host is receiving some kind of benefit from it. It's not one of those things where you're going to have a... There usually are costs associated with symbiotes or with some kind of mutualistic interaction like that, but... It is not parasitic because the benefits far outweigh the costs. So a good example of a symbiote is, you probably heard a lot about the gut microbiome or your gut flora or taking care of your healthy gut bacteria. Those are all symbiotes. It's another group of organisms, an entire ecosystem that lives in your body that you benefit from, but they also get the benefit from living inside of your body and feeding off of what you eat.
The thing that struck me here was that normally parasites or symbiotes or whatever you have are very well evolved and adapted to a certain species or to multiple species, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is a whole... Because they have the implication that they come from a planet full of these organisms. So presumably they have some sort of similar host organism to us on that planet?
I mean, I would think... Physiologically and evolutionarily, yes, it would have to be fairly similar because unless an organism is hyperplastic or hyperadaptable, which is what we'll get into later with some of these other parasite examples, it is very hard to just jump to a completely new host because that host will have some kind of adaptation or some kind of, Dave might know more about this, some like physiological barrier that will make it very hard to effectively parasitize.
So basically there's a planet out there just full of Tom Hardys.
If only. Oh, if only we could be so lucky.
I love seeing Tom Hardy run around and just go nuts like this. I really enjoy his, like, eccentric, weird roles. I can't tell if he's just overacting or just completely lost the plot in this film, but I love it.
Yeah. I think Tom Hardy's great.
Are there examples of parasites out there that, you know, like, kind of not consume organs, but can cause organ failure the way this one is implied to?
That Venom does? What organ failure does he do?
They make a big deal at one point of the fact that if Venom goes hungry, he has to start, like, consuming some of Tom Hardy.
Okay.
There's the doctor's appointment, and there's the joke at the end where Venom makes the joke of your liver's starting to look real tasty if we don't get something to eat at some point. Are there examples of, like, symbionts or parasites that can attack organs? I mean, that seems like a fairly self-defeating strategy.
There's parasites that do that, and it's just it's a straight-up parasitic strategy, but I can't think of any symbionts that do that will start feeding on the host if there's nothing else available, because they're adapted for a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. They just start to die themselves. They can't just switch to a completely different form of consumption.
So the focus that Libby had suggested that I loved for my little physiology comments on each of these movies is mainly just going to be aimed at discussing whether or not humans would be the ideal host for each of these. Which, no.
Because it goes into a dog at one point, right?
Right. Well, it...
It does.
So, the first one of just, like, why you brought up, like, the eating strategies. So, the symbiote, if it's making use of the existing architecture to try and feed, and basically it's like, oh, you know, you've got to consume and eat things for me, and it is eating a lot of people in this movie.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Take over a tiger. Human gastrointestinal systems are not designed for consumption of large animals. Like, you'd be more likely to find venom hiding in Central Park eating a bunch of berries from a bush. I mean, that's just closer to what you're going to get from kind of the natural, like, human reaction. Like, just sitting down and, like, going through a salad. He's not going to. So, like, yeah, you can maybe get those teeth structures or anything on the outside, but humans would not be ideal for eating other humans. Like, parasitize a polar bear, a grizzly, as Sam would say. Sam is terrified. Oh, I mean, everybody's terrified of grizzly bears. They're fucking terrifying.
I'm not terrified of grizzly bears. I'm just annoyed that everybody's like, oh, Australia's full of venomous animals. Where you guys have fucking bears roaming around that can just rip your face off.
Yeah, that's a good point.
At least they're not venomous, though. Yeah. Or are they?
Right.
I guess you see them coming. Well, I don't know that that'd help, actually.
And then the second thing...
That makes it worse.
The second thing that really doesn't work all that well for parasitizing humans when it comes to that perspective is that 100% you need to have the ability to cloak your presence. That, like, other animals might be able, if you have mild changes or, you know, external adaptations, you're still going to create fear or other things. Humans tend to be really particular about the way that other humans look, which means that venom has to hide. And if he's creating some sort of symbiotic relationship on the outside part of the skin, he's got to have access to the vascular system, which just means humans would not be ideal because you'd have to be drilling through the skin. And then on any regular basis where you needed to hide, you'd have to pop yourself in, leaving this very bleeding Tom Hardy standing in the street as this thing tries to plug up the holes. And he'd be like, I'm fine. Except in a terrible Boston accent.
Is that a Boston accent? Is that what that was? Okay.
It was a strange, because it's set in San Francisco, but he's doing a weird, weird accent.
Oh. Okay.
I think it's supposed to be Boston, though, yeah.
Okay. I don't get these things. I saw a person, commenting on a video with an Italian man in it the other day and saying, that guy does a really good, like, New York accent. I'm like, he's Italian. It's not a fucking New York accent. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so, I mean, the main thing is, if a parasite landed on Earth in access to the New York Zoo, and basically was like, oh, you know what? I need to find something that I'm going to armor up so that I can start eating a bunch of humans. There are way better choices than picking a human to eat human if you're going to use the existing gastrointestinal tract. You or I would have a lot of trouble digesting a shoe.
Or eating a shoe. Our jaws aren't that impressive.
In Old Man Logan, I think Venom forms a symbiosis with a T-Rex.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think you are right. Yeah, it makes way more sense. That would be a great decision. Yeah. Armor that thing up and then just work your way through the populace from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as far as host adaptation, an ideal one from a physiological perspective to try and choose, gonna have to give that a pretty low ranking.
Yeah. Yeah, Venom, not a parasite. It's a symbiote that has some parasitic tendencies, which you do see in nature, so... In a lot of these mutualistic or symbiotic relationships, you will have some organisms try to employ a so-called cheating strategy, where they will try to simply take from the host and not return any benefit to them. And that's when it switches, that's when it goes from this mutualistic to parasitic continuum. And sometimes this works, but those strategies are heavily selected against by the host populations. You see this with, like, cleaner wrasse, like these fish that will clean out the teeth of other fish and they'll feed off of it. But I'm not sure exactly what benefit they are returning to their host. It's something with helping their skin out, but whenever they don't return it to the fish will not return to that area anymore because the cheater is there and they're not, I'm not going to help you out, so goodbye. And that whole population then suffers.
Makes sense.
There are some relationships on the planet that we still just don't kind of understand. Have any of you heard of vampire finches?
Vampire finch?
Yeah, the vampire finch. Yeah.
Yeah, they're super
cool. So they're these tiny little birds which will drink blood from either gannets or boobies. I can't remember what the type of bird is.
Gannets.
They're very closely related. Gannets. Okay. Yeah. The gannets just pretty much sit still for it. And it's not like the birds have any sort of sedative. So, you know, they'll just peck a hole, near a feather, pluck out a feather, and then just drink blood from these gannets. It's incredible.
Cool.
And they still don't 100% understand why the gannets just kind of sit around. Like, there's a theory that because this behavior has evolved, they think quite recently, and maybe the gannets just don't really understand what's going on. But it never kills them. But we just, that's the thing. We just don't know how this relationship works. Like, we know what the vampire finches get out of it.
Maybe the gannets read some medieval text about bloodletting and they just think that they're balancing their humors.
Yeah. There you go.
They've also got a bunch of leeches on under the feathers.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, it's good you bring those up. Those like vampire finches, leeches, and mosquitoes. A lot of people, and vampire bats. A lot of people tend to think of those organisms when we think of parasites, but those are not true parasites. Those are what we call micropredators. It's a predatory interaction, but you're not killing your prey animal. You're just eating a little bit of it and leaving it alive.
Yeah.
Think about like a cow grazing on grass versus a human eating an entire apple.
They have this theory that there are a couple of smaller dinosaurs that did it. So not in the kind of T-Rex size, but large theropod carnivores who would just take chunks out of larger animals. And just, like, let the animal, you know, go away and heal and then come back later and take another chunk out of it. But obviously all this sort of, you know, hunting biology of creatures that have been extinct for 80 million years is always a bit tricky. So, we're not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Now, the question for Libby is, do you feel that the addition of a Tom Hardy struggling as he walks down the hallways of a university, trying to find someone to better explain the condition, and stumbles upon the office of a doctor, Adam Hasek, and then asks for an opinion on his condition? Do you feel this would improve the story? As he had some guy lecture down to him about the fact that he doesn't have a parasite, he's got a symbiote.
Yeah, and then Venom would just promptly eat him. lecturing.
It would be an honor.
Yeah. I think Venom would appreciate it. He doesn't like being called a parasite, remember?
Do you feel this story would have benefited from a little bit more of like a parasitology background or even a bit more like biology or ecology on the side of the parasite, like its home planet or what it was doing here on Earth? Or do you think it was fine just the way that it was, that would have just clogged up the plot?
Yeah, I mean, to me, this doesn't really strike me as a scientific-based movie.
Fair enough.
It seems very much alien action flick, and I think they did a good job with that. Just a fun, campy movie to watch Tom Hardy
eat lobster.
Eat a bunch of things.
The chimps are infected. They're highly contagious. They've been given an inhibitor.
Infected with what?
In order to cure, you must first understand.
Infected with what?
Listen, the animals are contagious. The infection is in their blood and saliva. One bite! Stop! Stop! You have no idea!
Speaking of aliens,
ooh.
Zombies.
Yes.
Moving on to our next film, I guess.
Yeah.
Adam?
Yeah.
Or Sam?
I haven't seen 28 Days Later, so somebody tell people what a zombie is.
Well, I think we all know what a zombie is, but in the universe of 28 Days Later and the sequel, 28 Weeks Later.
Also great. Yeah.
Those movies, I just remember a little tidbit from my childhood, seeing the cover for 28 Days Later at Blockbuster, which is this fairly horrifying image of, like, a biohazard mask overlaid over the biohazard sign with, like, this vivid red, like, sunset background and, like, this wasteland, like, foreground. Like, this movie looks terrifying, and I'd heard how it was supposed to be, like, quote, the scariest movie ever. And it really is in a whole lot of ways, but zombies are, of course, these organisms, or these humans that have been infected with some kind of virus or some kind of magic, whatever kind of rules the particular universe has. In this case, it's a virus called the Rage Virus. That almost instantaneously turns humans into these bloodthirsty, ravenous monsters that are pretty quick and pretty violent and just tear people limb from limb.
Mm.
So yeah,
Yeah, and basically the setting of London finds itself with a young Cillian Murphy waking up to find that the city has been in the midst of a zombie infestation while he's been asleep. And he's been out for 28 days. Dun, dun, dun. And then, facing the coming, zombie invasion and, a amazing face off at the end with Christopher Eccleston.
Eccleston.
Yeah, his character's great.
Stop saying Eccleston.
No. My partner does the exact same thing all the time. I refuse.
Says Eccleston or tells you to stop saying Eccleston?
It tells me to stop.
But yeah, so zombies as like the result of a parasite is a really kind of interesting argument, right? Because there are parasites out there that do change the behavior of their host significantly.
Mm-hmm.
There are. There really are. And it's interesting because the zombie itself isn't the parasite. They're the vector that is transmitting the parasite that turns you into a zombie, which further propagates the virus itself. So it's one of those strategies where it doesn't quite make sense because zombies are usually portrayed as tearing people limb from limb and consuming them, which does not then further transmit the virus and it becomes a dead end. So that kind of behavior would not be selected for ecologically or evolutionarily, but it seems to depend on people having a glancing blow or a single bite and you then become, or in the case of 20 days later, a single drop of blood directly into your eyeball, which is a really cool scene. But that, it doesn't quite make sense because there's a fine line that parasites and this particular viruses and bacteria have to have between their virulence, so how deadly they are to the host, and their ability to, and their transmissibility, so how quickly you can go from one host to another. And if you're incredibly virulent and you really fuck up the host, it's gonna kill it quicker and there's less chance for that virus to propagate and reproduce with inside of the host and then build up their numbers and then infect others.
Right.
Yeah.
So typically with zombies, there's just not like enough time for them to complete their life cycle. Is that kind of what you're saying?
No, there is enough time. It's just a matter of the virulent side of it, making the zombie, the virus making a person a bloodthirsty monster that kills any other potential hosts doesn't make sense because the virus can't then transmit and continue reproducing to another host.
Could it simply be that, I mean, normally when we see zombie movies, with the exception of a couple, I think 28 weeks later happens out in the countryside quite a lot. Would it be a case of normally the zombies don't go for other humans? They would go for animals or other sources of meat. And, you know, they only go for humans when you're in a situation where there's no, like, kind of other sources of, you know, protein around.
If it can jump species.
No. I'm just saying that they use other species as prey.
It's a food source.
Like, they just transmit from human to human, but they will prey on other species.
Yeah, potentially. That could work, okay. I think, if you're just having them. But I think you then run into the issues that Dave might then know more about of if a human is then consuming raw animals, that's really not good for our systems anymore. Like, we're not really we've moved away from having all those raw, potentially disease-ridden food.
Mm.
So that could have other issues for the host.
Okay. Yeah. True.
Or vector in this case.
Yeah, in this case, I actually, the concept of the zombie, I don't have that many problems with because it's following a general course similar to what we see with the rabies virus. With the exception of it's just way too quick, but basically rabies from a very sort of shortened perspective is just the idea that the virus first comes in contact. So let's say that Adam is infected. Bites someone basically with the virus.
It would explain a lot of things.
Uh-huh. With the virus present in his saliva, gets transferred into local muscle tissue, and then starts to work its way through the muscle tissue as the virus replicates and grows, makes its way into the surrounding nerves, which we need to connect to muscle tissue to get movement to occur. It then can move up the nerve fibers into the central nervous system, where it then eventually makes its way to the brain. As it starts to grow and create neurological changes, abnormal behavior, and basically causing people and animals to act abnormally, which in this situation is bite, it then really interestingly works its way down into the salivary glands, where at that point, then it just starts the life cycle all over again, which is a good system. The virus isn't concerned with what the creature is going to be eating in the interim. It's just concerned with basically moving from creature to creature to creature. But exactly as Libby was pointing out, it needs enough time to grow and replicate. Otherwise, it would spread too rapidly. It would run out of hosts, and then it would find itself in a situation where, like, it just wouldn't work anymore. A movie focusing on a much slower progression viral signs associated with rabies or with the zombie virus would make far more sense.
So you do think that the most likely candidate is a virus, that a parasite wouldn't be able to pull something like this off?
Well, that's one of those things where a virus is a parasite. So it's, right. It is,
okay.
Its entire life cycle depends on manipulating or jacking into another organism's host, in this case, physiology, and taking resources from it to then further its own life cycle. So a virus is a parasite.
By definition,
yes.
Oh, okay.
But when we think about parasites, we tend to think about the more, at least people outside of the field of disease ecology tend to think about the, like a macro parasite, something like a tick. Or, an endoparasitic worm, like a tapeworm or something like that.
No, we had a guy back in my research days who showed up to give a talk at one point and was doing his presentation for his thesis. And they were doing some really interesting neurological modulation that was taking place. They were making alterations to the way that mice reacted to different stimulus. And they were using this really cool technique where you can actually get different nerve cells to become photoresponsive, such that you can breed these mice that if you attach little helmets where you've got sensors inside their brains, depending on which types of light frequency you activate in different areas of the brain, you can cause increased activation in those areas. So really interesting. There were three different things that he'd figured out that he could do. And the three things that he decided to talk in his talk about was, one, he'd found a way where you could increase hunger in these associated mice. So he could turn on this light and it would actually like increase their appetite based on the area of the brain he was working on. He'd found a way that if he increased the light in an area of the brain, it would actually decrease pain sensation. It would increase release of various natural painkillers as well as help to sort of basically deaden the feelings of pain or discomfort. And then the last one that he'd found was to decrease basically frontal lobe activity, decreasing the things that we think about with basic sort of logic and reasoning. And so he happened to joke in this talk of all the different things. He was like, yeah, like we've created zombie mice. If we were interested, we can make them feel less pain. We can make them really, really hungry, and we can make them really stupid. And he was kind of like laughing about this. And I had a friend of mine in the lab who was absolutely terrified of zombies, who was like, this is it, man. This is where it starts. This is the first guy who makes it. He's up there joking. He thinks he's being fucking funny. And he's like, I'm sitting here. And he's like, you just wrecked the world, man.
That's incredible. That sounds like a really cool talk, by the way.
Yeah. But it basically, we can create those types of alterations. It would not be unreasonable to think that you could have a virus that the way that it would be acting on the brain would create this set of symptoms to help with its transmission, because we do have a virus that exists. So human beings, in this case, host for a zombie invasion with so many humans around, with our populations being so densely packed in different areas, we're actually not a bad host for this. The problem is, it's just it would take so long for it to develop. We definitely would quarantine during those periods, and we would come up with some sort of vaccine or other strategy to properly deal with this, the same way that we put so much energy into rabies.
But Dave, would we quarantine? Would we actually take the vaccine? Because I think, you know, in the past, maybe I would agree with that. We could solve these things. But our response to SARS-CoV-2, aka COVID-19, has me convinced that if a true zombie virus in this kind of catastrophic sickness were to sweep the Earth, we would be doomed.
Well, a couple countries would be all right, but America would be absolutely fucked.
Yep. <Yeah. laughs> Yep. And by proxy, Mexico and Canada as well.
But just let me explain, that bite, it's all natural. I don't want them putting any of that strange chemical into my blood. I don't know where that came from.
My God, who's this American that just stumbled into the podcast?
Okay, so slow zombies or fast zombies? What will be easy to control?
Slow.
They're going to be slow.
Ah, but see, that's the thing. Like, I think that'd be like COVID-19, where, you know, it spreads so easily because the symptoms don't show up for like 5, 6, 10 days sometimes. Dave, if you have a faster-moving zombie, does that imply automatically a faster and, like, the symptoms show faster?
No, because, I mean, the biggest concern, and Adam, Libby, and I were talking about this a couple of days ago, with any virus that invades the neurological tissue that creates abnormal behaviors is, by definition, going to do that. It's going to create, like, the biggest thing with rabies, I remember as a kid, and Libby and I were chatting about this.
When I had rabies as a kid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What? No.
Rabies?
We would get rabies, raccoons, and animals and things. So, like, it's a big talk in the country where, like, your parents take you aside and they're like, if you ever see a raccoon that's out in the middle of the day, You're not in a fucking Disney movie. You don't go over and pet it on the head because you're like, I'm going to be friends. You get the fuck away from that thing. And you tell a fucking adult, because that animal should be terrified of humans. And if it's coming up to see you, this is not a cute moment. It's not a sweet moment. It is very likely rabid. And I mean, I could see them having these like fast motions, but if you've ever seen like a truly rabid animal before, they are just so neurologically abnormal. They're striking in various animal areas. They're kind of stumbling all over the place. Like, it's clear that the systems just aren't working the way that they're supposed to. So I'm not saying that we couldn't see these humans kind of like rushing in different areas, but they would not have predictable behaviors, I don't imagine.
Kind of full control over their motor functions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a bit of worry a while ago here in Norway, and I think it would have hit in Canada as well, with a lot of cervids, so deer, moose, that sort of thing, contracting chronic wasting disease.
Mm, yeah.
It's here too.
Which,
it's
here
too. Really, yeah. In Arkansas.
Yeah, and it's here.
We had a huge problem with it, and there was a lot of people worried that it could jump over to humans. And I was asking a friend when I was, this was back when I was doing my master's on moose, I was asking him, like, how do you know when a reindeer or a moose has chronic wasting disease? And he was basically saying, well, this is Andre, who has actually been on the podcast before.
Yeah.
Who said, well, you'll see a bunch of reindeer running all in one direction, and then you'll see Jimmy over at the side running around a tree in circles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it's, I think it actually curves like the lobes of the brain or something like that. It's really
quite severe. It destroys brain tissue, from my understanding, because chronic wasting disease is a disease, but it is the symptom of a prion. So that's one of those things that is considered like a parasite-like factor. So a prion is just a protein that is folded in the wrong way. So the proteins in your body have a very, very specific structure. And if they're folded in the wrong way, they don't work. But this prion is basically a contagious, deconstructed protein. So instead of being folded correctly, it's folded weird. It hits another protein. That protein becomes folded weird and it just spreads.
Right.
Okay.
Interesting. We say prion, but yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that Dave's is correct then.
No, probably not.
No, Dave, the general rule with different pronunciations between the two of you lot is Americans be like, oh, how weird is it the way the Canadians say it? And then the whole rest of the world is like, we say it that way too. You're the fucking weird one.
Okay, aluminium.
But yes, you do get...
Actually, didn't we have this conversation recently, but it wasn't supposed to be either aluminium or aluminium. It was supposed to be something different, and we both bastardized it.
I think that's right, but at the very least, it's spelled aluminum. There's no extra I in there, so I'm sucked in.
It's spelled aluminium in our country, so...
So you spell it wrong.
Yes, but, Adam.
we could see transmission through something like a prion, maybe, but the thing is, with prion transmission, you have to be consuming the material.
Mm, okay.
That's an issue in some human cultures with cannibalism that are still practiced culturally, because you get it in your brain, and they eat the brain tissue. I think it's in the Pacific Islands, in some of those cultures, specifically the women and female children will eat the brains of their... deceased loved ones?
It's a big funeral thing, apparently, for a lot of groups. You're eating parts of them to try and, like, keep some of them with you. If memory serves, it was a European explorer who had brought one of these prion diseases into the area.
Classic.
Had been eaten by one of the locals and then ended up infecting the population that had this normal behavior that hadn't caused issues for hundreds of years. Which then all of them ended up struggling with the fact that basically the disease spread from human to human based on their funeral practices.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't that they had this happen or anything like this. This was, again, brought in by
colonizers.
Colonizers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's a good premise for a horror movie.
Ooh.
Title, Colonizers.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoy that most of the time the horror movies is colonizers get their fucking just desserts.
Exactly.
By getting turned into some bloody desserts, am I right?
So,
very bad joke.
Question for our story expert then. I don't think I really had any problems when I was watching 28 Days Later where I was like, oh, I need like a better degree of science or anything like that. And they purposely didn't go into a lot of the information as to like how it spreads or anything like that. Did you feel that this movie would have benefited from that standard science character who comes in and kind of explains it in what seems to be all of these zombie movies?
I mean, I think that really depends on whose perspective you're telling the story from.
Hmm.
I think in this case, the whole mood is set by this guy waking up and not knowing what the fuck is going on. So I don't think an explanation is owed to the audience, because they are trying to put the audience in this guy's shoes of like, holy hell, what the fuck, I'm gonna die.
Right. He's a bicycle courier who got hit by a bus before all this started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
So, but if you have like a story, you know, told by sort of like more of like the patient zero or like kind of ground floor scientist who's like working on this and sees the spread, then you can kind of go into more of that scientific explanation.
I would appreciate a room full of scientists from different disciplines following the virus around the planet in a big plane and explaining constantly to everybody what's going
making
on.
Notes. Yeah.
I thought Sam was going to say that he would appreciate a scene of a big group of scientists sitting down and discussing this virus as a zombie breaks in the middle of the room and starts eating all of the scientists as they're fleeing around.
That would be fine. Yeah. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, with the camera panning out and where's your science now?
Yeah.
Checkmate, atheists.
All right. Speaking of science, what? No. But we should come back to this, zombies, at some point in the future, because I'd also really appreciate somebody talking about this whole concept of whether or not a virus is a living organism, because I think that's a really interesting debate that I don't really understand fully, and we should come back and devote some time to that in the future at some point.
What the hell happened to you, Otis?
Poison ivy out back, maybe?
We're itchy.
No, they're not my parents. They're trying to trick you.
Shh. Hey.
The worms are in their brains.
Yeah, as Dave said before, if you're listening and you want us to go into any of these kind of movies in a bit more depth, just, send us a quick message. Yeah.
At the very least, at least for two of these, we're definitely going to be doing a full-blown episode on them.
But which two, you'll have to find out.
Ooh.
Slither.
Yes.
Yes.
Dave, do you want to take this one?
Oh, God, I love this movie. So, Slither was a early James Gunn project, basically focusing around the idea of a small town that reminds me of home way more than it probably should, watching this movie again with my partner, that has a meteorite crash into it, releasing a organism that infects... What's the name of the actor again? Michael Rooker?
Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Infects Michael Rooker's... dickish rich dude, and then allows him to start spreading his alien parasitic infection throughout the local town, only held at bay by the work of Nathan Fillion, who does a shit job all the way through that I absolutely love.
Nathan Fillion's such a goddamn delight in that movie. Oh, and so everything
good. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the actor who plays the mayor, but the mayor is my favorite character throughout that entire fucking movie.
Oh god, who is he?
Oh, Peter Quill's uncle, yeah. Greg Henry.
Yeah. You guys ever seen any shit like that? I've never seen any shit like that, and I watch Animal Planet all the fucking time.
Yeah. The dialogue in the movie is incredible.
Yeah, but is this a parasite?
Yes.
Yes, it is a parasite, and it's not a trophically transmitted parasite. It is by definition, it kind of is, but it is more of just a complex life cycle parasite. So one that goes from one host species to another, or one host to another, and different parts of its life cycle are fulfilled in these different hosts. So you have this like grub that comes out of this meteorite that shoots this quill into Michael Rooker's chest.
Mm-hmm.
He then turns into this like queen mother / soldier / guardian role of a eusocial organism that then kidnaps a poor helpless woman, fills her full of parasites, and she becomes this like brood mare parasite thing that just is full of these infectious stages, eventually bursts. All of these infected leech looking stages go into town and take over people, turning them into effectively zombies.
Mm-hmm.
But is also this weird distributed intelligence where all of these things are also one organism, which is weird. And I don't think ever can, it
does
truly
not work.
Happens in nature.
No, unfortunately. I mean, or fortunately for the organism.
What does eusocial mean?
Eusocial organism is one like an ant or a bee, where you have a colony type structure of a lot of drones, a lot of workers, like a caste system within it. But this group of organisms works together as one. So as one massive superorganism.
Is there a parasite that is eusocial?
Ooh.
No, because parasites are... They don't work as a group. They're always single individuals.
Selfish little bastards.
Yeah. And they disrupt eusocial structures. We have that. There's a couple of mite species that affect bees and will completely decimate colonies in terms of the work that they do in terms of completely disrupting normal structure.
Cuckoos, brood parasites, will often like act in concert.
Hmm.
They've got these fantastic examples of bird mothers who've been parasitized, and they have taken the eggs and kicked the eggs out of the nest because they've recognized them as not theirs. And a bunch of cuckoos will rock up and fuck the nest right up, being like, hey, next time there's one of those eggs in there, you bloody take care of it. Yeah. Like the cuckoo mafia will rock up to town and,
That is awful.
It doesn't happen everywhere, but it does happen. Yeah.
It's a good strategy.
It is a good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, you social parasites. Like, could that evolve in us? What would it take for a you social parasite to evolve?
It just wouldn't work because the eusocial structure depends on having this caste system of these different levels of the organism of like the hierarchical structure working in concert as one group to have like basically a society. You have workers, you have warriors to protect them, and then you have the queen to like produce and make more of these offspring. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make sense as a parasitic cycle because parasites will be they'll compete with one another for the host itself. And that's one of the things that can be difficult as well when you have a really intense infection on a given host organism, because a mosquito is not a parasite. They're a micro-predator, but to use them as an example, or a tick would be even better. If you have a single tick, it has all of your body to take blood from, and it's really going to enjoy it. But if you have 10,000 ticks on you, all of those ticks are fighting with one another for your blood. And the more of them there are, the less they're going to be getting, so... Mm-hmm. Having a eusocial structure does not make sense for a parasite.
So this, I feel like the Slither is the only reason that it does work in this movie, because like they're trying to, like when you see towards the end when they're like forming with Michael Rooker, sort of like benefiting him as the main host. So like you have to have that collective intelligence in order for it to be eusocial, because it is essentially one organism, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, maybe we should shelf this discussion, because we're going to look at aliens after this, and they, I think, are more of a eusocial parasite. So let's, yeah.
Makes sense.
Slither, though.
Let's slither on back to the main topic at hand.
Let's slither
back in there.
Is this I still haven't seen this movie, but it's, there's different life cycles, right? Like, it's a really strange life cycle that's presented by the movie.
Yeah, so... You have this weird, like, it looks like a feather or a quill that gets shot out of this initial worm into Michael Rooker, who becomes the initial host. Mm-hmm. And you have...
Well, it's like a moving creature, though, right? Because you see it moving in his body.
Yeah, because that's what I was about to go into is an infective stage. So a lot of different parasites will have a part of their life cycle where they are producing a lot of, quote, infective stages. And that's what these leeches are that burst out of that poor woman in the barn. And you have this in trematodes in aquatic systems, which are these little, like, worm-like parasites, where they will infect a snail, and the snail then becomes full of basically a shit ton of little worms that will then start coming out of the snail, swimming in the water, and infecting other hosts, usually amphibians or odonates, like dragonflies and damselflies.
Mm-hmm.
Those will then be eaten by a predator, and that parasite then finishes its life cycle inside of the predator. So you have Michael Rooker become this, like, weird... queen or this like reproductive stage of the parasite. He inserts his tentacles into other hosts, putting eggs or something inside of them. They then start filling up with worms. The worms burst out of them, infect other hosts, which then go back and fuse with Michael Rooker. So it's a weird, kind of similar to real life parasitic life cycle, but also it doesn't work like this in nature.
Okay.
It's super interesting.
The worms are heavily implied to be getting somehow from the oral cavity into the brain, because anytime that they blast someone's head off, you see one of the worms inside the brain being like, and then it like runs off somewhere.
Much like a yerk in the Animorphs books.
I've heard of these books. They sound nightmarish, like really horrifying.
Oh, the Animorphs were great. They were great.
I loved them.
No, yeah, I was saying they sound nightmarish, as in like I've read a few of the plot twists and I've been like, this does not sound like a kid's book. Like,
oh yeah, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's real dark.
But is this another situation whereby could they be a generalist? Like, is this a life cycle that could allow them to be a generalist? Or are they, you know, would they have, again, had to evolve to specifically suit a species very similar to humans?
It likely, especially with trophically transmitted parasites, ones that have a complex life cycle where you go from one host species to another, you have a very, very specific evolutionary pathway and adaptations that let you get from one host to another. Because otherwise you end up in dead-end hosts, and or use that as an example, I'll bring up Toxoplasma gondosis.
Gondi?
Toxoplasmos gondii.
Toxoplasmos gondii, thank you. The bacterium that is that a lot of cats will have. And if you own cats, you might develop toxoplasmic tendencies if you have this infection as well, which can really affect your mental health, so be careful around them. But if you have this bacteria get into a mouse, because it is a trophically transmitted parasite, it must be consumed by a predator to complete its life cycle. It changes the mouse's behavior so that it's no longer afraid of cat scents or cat urine, for example. It will instead become attracted to them. So they're more likely to be eaten by a cat. The bacteria can then finish its life cycle inside of the cat. But if a human picks up this virus, or this bacteria rather, and has toxoplasmosis, you are a dead-end host for that parasite. It is not going to be able to finish its life cycle because the cat isn't going to eat you.
No.
So in this case, it would not be able to just go from any host willy-nilly. Like in the movie, we see them affect a deer, a human.
Well, and I was about to say, we see them affect other, like, because it's an alien, right? So we see it affect other creatures on different planets through the flashback.
Right. It's like an alien-looking sheep thing.
Looks like a hippo to me.
Right, and this is where we come into the concept of the human not being ideal for a number of reasons for this host. The first of which is just the initial, so exactly as like Adam was saying, we do have different organisms that can shift neurological behavior. So toxoplasma is a great example when it comes to mice. We also have the fungi that infect ants, the name of which. Perfect. That potentially works. There's a whole list of different organisms that kind of like fall into this category. There's the kamikaze horsehair worm. The one that makes grasshoppers commit suicide by throwing themselves into the water. You can create small neurological changes.
Specific behaviors.
Taking over an entire organism, taking over memory, taking over motor function, moving them around, completely controlling them. That's fucking impossible. The biggest issue is just rewatching that film when the parasite burrows into Michael Rooker. Like it starts in the chest and then you see it's like crawling along. Like they do that x-ray picture and you see it like crawling along under the lung, but it crosses directly through like his trachea and his other structures. And we do have burrowing organisms. There are a number of burrowing parasites that usually it's an abnormal behavior to burrow in those wrong directions, but human life from human to human in terms of like neurological structures, let alone from mammal to mammal or even from say human to jellyfish, like we still don't understand how jellyfish have eyes without a traditional central nervous system. They don't really have a brain, but they somehow are able to regulate visual stimuli. So the idea that you have a organism that can move from planet to planet that feels comfortable not only finding the brain, because that would be fucking hard if you're dropping in different planets because everything's going to have a different neurological structure, but then also feels comfortable not just controlling humans, but also controlling deer and other animals. That's fucking nuts. Like humans would not be your ideal host in this situation. If you were thinking about a way, like if you're just looking to shift neurological behavior, because humans will catch on to that. If Libby gets up in the morning and Adam is head pressed against the wall and just kind of walking without speaking, it's not like she's going to be like, oh, he's having a bit of a weird day. All right, back to breakfast. What were you thinking you wanted to do today? She's going to call the doctor.
Cops.
Right. You're not going to be able to do any big neurological shift, which means that you would be much better hedging your bets at infecting one of those other species, like the deer or the bear, other animals that aren't going to be able to respond or find you to that same extent, as opposed to we're going to find you really quick in humans. I mean, one of the limitations we talk about in veterinary medicine all the time is like, we'll do something that we consider really radical or really expensive. And then I'll get talking to a friend in human medicine. He's like, that's it? That's all you guys did? Like, you just did a single MRI? Like, oh, like, did you think about doing bone density scanning? And like, what was the blood work up? Like, what was your PCR analysis coming back? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. We don't get to do any of that shit. Because human medicine is always going to have more of the medicine, more of the follow-up, more of the workup, right? We're always going to do more in that category.
Yeah.
So not an ideal host. If you're thinking about infecting something and you want to go unnoticed and start spreading, humans would definitely not be my pick for the slither in this.
No.
Now, the only positive thing that works out for them really well, and something I loved about this movie, and I do hope we revisit Slither at a later date, I fucking loved the biomass. That basically there's a really big focus on the fact that if you want to make all these worms, if you want to grow, if you want to get more organisms, that you have to be consuming huge amounts of food.
You have to eat.
Sam, I know you haven't seen this movie, but they have a scene where Michael Rooker comes into the grocery store and he's just buying piles of steak with the alien organism in his brain.
Meat.
And one of the cashiers is like, "You doing something special? Having like a little barbecue?" And he's like, "Yeah.
Something like that.
Special barbecue for the missus." And like, he's just piling these like piles of meat up. And eventually he runs to a point where he's having so much trouble finding meat, he starts taking local pets and going off into the woods and just getting any sort of like rancid animal he possibly can find, because he's just so desperate to find protein and biomass to try and grow and develop his brood. And it's a really good idea. It's a really well carried, and humans would be a good species for that, because I was thinking that, like, yeah, if you have enough money, like it infected a rich guy, you can walk into any grocery store and just get piles of dead animal protein. Even like a credit card, you don't even have to be rich. You could just walk in and be like, yeah, I'm just going to get $10,000 worth of meat because I'm never going to pay this off. I'm going to eat the banker in a week.
And this is something you see in nature with that trematode example I gave earlier with the snails, where this is the kind of parasite, especially for that woman who gets stuffed into the barn and becomes this enormous blob. It's called a parasitic castrator, because the parasites in particular will nestle into the gonadal cavities of the reproductive structures of the host. And as they grow, it destroys the reproductive structure, so the host eventually becomes castrated.
That's so cool.
But because they're not, when they're eating, none of the resources are going towards the reproductive structures or to their eggs. It all just goes towards growth. So these infected, castrated individuals get big. They just keep growing and growing and growing. So, like the woman in the barn, that is a thing that happens in nature to that, not quite to that visceral and explosive extent, but.
As is that question of, you know, how, like, you, cause when you don't know much about nature and you don't, you know, kind of understand that whole drive to reproduce, you look at, you know, really successful animals and you're just like, why waste all this time feeding your kids? Like, why don't just, you know, just feed, you know, and grow big and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I guess this movie answers that question of that sort of parasite answers the question of what would happen if, you know, you didn't need to reproduce anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely say that the fittest I've ever been is right after a breakup where I'm like, fuck, yeah. I gotta start like taking care of myself.
Would
again.
You call that Libby? The revenge bot?
Libby. So from a story perspective, I felt that they did they throw in a couple of like school lectures about parasitic organisms and about different ones like making it work. And they kind of drop some like random hints where Sam, there's a bathtub scene involving a woman that is completely unnecessarily done. But she does have a great scene where she gets to burn one of the monsters that tries to get into her mouth using a hair curler, which is a great scene where it kind of like pusses and explodes on the floor. But when she bites down on the organism, she's somehow able to get half of the memories of where this organism has been. So we get this like very small CGI scene that must have cost James Gunn a fortune at the time, because he did not have a lot of money for this movie, of just like these different organisms on another planet attacking and cannibalizing and growing off like another species.
Most of the budget.
And it's sort of their excuse of like, and then she becomes kind of the scholar figure going forward for any time like someone's infected or something happens. She's like, well, they'll see us right now because they're all connected. Or you can't get pregnant with the worms unless he gets you with both of those tube things. Like, don't worry about it. But I didn't really feel like we needed another like science character or somebody else like explaining or running around. Libby, I don't know if you felt that would have added, or if there was one other character you felt this movie could have really benefited from.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that he went about that, I think that was pretty much the only way he could explain the lore behind this creature, you know, being a single intelligence. And so her kind of being half almost infected by this parasite. So she got to sort of glimpse that background or history, if you will. But I agree. I don't think that he necessarily needed to show us that. I think it was interesting. Just like in all the other, a lot of other critter movies, like we don't really see the historical background of where they came from or why they're trying to, you know, take over. It's just that run or die kind of monster movie. So,
yeah.
So you wouldn't have wanted that scene from the local college as they wander in to try and get advice, and they find the door of Dr. Adam Hasek, who quickly gives them a speech of what he thinks is happening with the parasites before he gets beaten to death yeah. by an infected deer.
Deer can fuck you up, by the way. Deer are strange. Mm-hmm. Deer are dangerous animals, so yeah.
There is an infected deer that tries to kill Nathan Fillion in this and really messes him up.
Nice, okay.
It's a good scene.
We're going to draw a little bit of everybody's blood. We're going to find out who's the thing. Watching Norris in there gave me the idea that maybe every part of him was a whole. Every little piece was an individual animal with a built-in desire to protect its own life. You see, when a man bleeds, it's just tissue. But blood from one of you things won't obey when it's attacked. It'll try and survive.
Okay, yeah, so let's skip ahead. We've talked about aliens before, but it is worth mentioning that, like we said before, Adam, the aliens are a eusocial parasite, right?
They're a eusocial organism, and they are a parasitoid. So
okay.
A parasitoid is different from a parasite in the sense that a parasitoid has to kill its host to finish its life cycle. You have really cool examples of this in nature with something called a parasitoid wasp. These wasps are those examples that you might have seen that where they lay an egg inside of an aphid or a caterpillar, and those eggs, much like an alien, hatch and eat the prey from the inside, and they burst out of it and kill it.
Okay. So, yeah, as we said before, there's not really a huge any examples of eusocial parasitoids or parasites in nature. But, you know, I think it's an interesting creature, at least aliens.
Fascinating
creature. The xenomorphs.
Right, and if you're interested in hearing more about that, you can go back and listen to our xenomorph set.
Yeah. Now, more interesting, I think, is the thing. Now, we never really get a name for this monster, do we, at any point?
Nope. They never even call it the thing. Right. That's just what the movie calls it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is untitled. Yeah.
It's the organism. It's the only thing the doctor uses for it repeatedly.
This is like a movie based on, a remake of a 50s movie, which was based on a book originally, I think, right?
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is a really good movie.
John Carpenter's, yes.
I have never watched through the entire, the sequel or prequel or whatever you want to call it. They made about 10 years ago. Yeah, I've heard it's, like, okay, but it's just, it doesn't really kind of...
Neither have I.
Yeah, I've heard it's alright, but it's all kind of CG and not very good CG.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they actually did a lot of practical effects originally, and then the studio said, no, just put CGI in.
That's unfortunate.
And apparently the prequel also falls into the same problem of the Alien Prometheus movies, where they try to go into the background of where the alien ship came from and what the organisms were.
Oh.
Ruining the most interesting part of, we've talked about before, the best part of the first Alien was just not knowing what this ship is. It's landed, it's got these eggs in it, there's some sort of dead pilot character. I never wanted an explanation.
Yeah.
No. Little mystery's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing, that's the best part, finding this spaceship under the ice, finding this organism that's somehow gotten halfway away from the ship that you never actually get to see. They don't show you what the organism in the ice looked like, it's just kind of this dark blobbish thing.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
I think too, speaking of ruining the plot, I think if you're like, if you, much like Sam, can speak Norwegian, and if you've never seen this movie before, the opening scene will ruin the movie for you, at least ruin one of the big twists, because the pilots of the helicopter are from the Norwegian base, which is where the prequel slash sequel is set, and they're like, kill the dog, it's not a dog, like there's an alien in it or something along those lines.
Oh shit, so that it's actually...
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, in Norwegian.
Yeah. I enjoy the fact that Kristoffer Hivju is in the sequel. Everyone knows him as, I think, Tormund from Game of Thrones. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they do make an effort to get some Norwegians in there, yeah. It's fun to see. He's a massive pop star over here. Like, he's from Trondheim, the city I live in.
Oh, really?
People love him. Yeah, yeah. Never seen him around, but...
You know, if only he could be so lucky.
Doesn't matter. I assume he probably lives in Hollywood or something like that. Probably. But anyway, point is... Oh, not point is this a parasite?
I have to say, that's really hard. It's really hard to say, because it is, there's a lot of different parasitic strategies it employs. It hijacks the nervous system of its host, it takes over their bodies, but it also changes their bodies in very horrifying and interesting ways.
It completely replaces them. Every single cell.
Yeah.
It's not parasitizing, it's just replacing.
It's
mimicry.
It's a weird kind of predator, I think. It's not really a parasite.
So you think that this is essentially just a mimic predator?
Yeah, Yeah, a horrifyingly intelligent mimic.
On a cellular basis.
I enjoy that in these movies, though. Not so much the prequel, but certainly the original from the 80s. All the... You kind of understand what all the characters are doing and why they're doing it. It's not one of these horror films where you're just like, why the fuck did you do that? Mm-hmm. That's such a dumb thing to do. They all act very kind of, you know, very rationally. Like, it makes sense what they attempt. And, you know, they almost beat it.
Well, we do not know. We don't know if they beat it.
I know, you don't know.
Right, which is such a great ending.
And that's the thing. Yeah, there's so many theories about this because the director was just like, no, I'm leaving all these questions unanswered. You have to guess. Like, there's scenes in the movie where, like, a dog, which is infected first, goes into an office. You never find out which office that was. You never, like, they kill a bunch of people and you don't know some of the time whether, you know, when they were infected, were they infected, all that sort of stuff.
I think the only character you ever know for sure was never infected was Kurt Russell, the hero of the movie.
There's theories about that too, though.
I think, right, I think, that's what I'm saying, I think, but for every single other character, I think, there's enough time where they're off screen where you don't know, are they the original? Are they, have they been replaced? Are they, like, you know, on their way to being replaced? Yeah. It's just so ambiguous.
Yeah. And when MacReady crawls out at the end, like, we don't know if he's had contact with the viral organism he was fighting before he sets himself down across from Keith David's character, and they kind of have that stare off as the darkness takes.
Yeah. But this is by far the least realistic of any of these creatures.
Yeah.
Like, there's no kind of parallel to it at all. Like we said, a mimic predator, maybe, but, I mean...
No, and I do hope we do a full episode on this, because there's so much cool stuff to cover.
And it really is fascinating, though. This is the perfect invasive species.
Yeah.
What form of reproduction is this? Because it's just cloning itself again and again, right? Essentially?
It's like a virus. It's invading the other cells, using them to reproduce itself, and then killing those cells and, like, bursting it with it. It's a weird mix between a virus and, like Dave was saying, cellular mitosis, where mitosis being the process by which one cell splits into two in, like, a copy of itself. But if, for this thing, it is going into their body, their blood, their cells, taking them, copying them, so it knows, like, what they look like, and it has all their memories and their personality as well. But then they're gone, effectively, and they become part of this enormous singular organism, this collective. It's like a superorganism in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And all it needs to really do is to touch them once, and then
the process fuse with them somehow. Fuse, like a single drop of blood, probably.
Yeah. It's really cool as well. Like, there's just so many... they have this scene where they realize that every cell of this organism is, like...
protecting itself.
Is its own individual... Yeah, individual capable of protecting itself. So they, you know, take a drop of everyone's blood and put it on a petri dish and, you know, try and burn the blood with a soldering iron. And, you know, it's incredibly tense. Like, they just go from petri dish to petri dish.
Have any of you read the short story that someone wrote from the point of view of the thing?
No.
I want to now.
Have you read that?
Mm-mm.
It's on some internet forum. It might have been on Reddit, but it's basically like this very short, like, I think less than 1,000 words from the thing's point of view, where it does not understand why everything else doesn't want to fuse with it, because it comes from a planet or from a society or a species where being part of the collective is what you want, and being split apart, like, hurts you or it lessens you and it makes you, like, unhappy. So it's just very confused and it's very in pain when they're, like, burning it because it doesn't like the heat.
Mm.
But it just wants everyone to be part of it because, of course, that's what you want. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I found it just now, yeah.
Sam will send it to us afterward, and we can put the link up on the website.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, from following with our infecting humans perspective, now I feel like Sam's going to get excited about this point because humans would not be your ideal host, again, to infect in this situation. So when it infects, because the biggest problem is if it's replicating DNA to try and replicate structure, you're not going to get facial hair. You're not going to get alterations that are taking place in memory, in basic identity. It makes way more sense to infect the dog. Rewatching it.
No, a fucking bird. This is like the Arctic. There are birds that migrate almost the entire, like, latitudinal span of the planet. Find just a fucking migratory bird, which are plentiful out there. Humans are not well adapted for the Antarctic. Like,
no.
Sorry, I'm getting a little...
Almost but nothing
what I mean,
is.
Yeah. What I mean is where it's infected the dog, and we see it, like, it then tries to spread into the other dogs. It never got that. As I, like, or you would just want to stay quiet. Like, you know, and then eventually when you get back to a larger population base, because you're exposing yourself where it does that huge big transition to turn into when it's trying to take over and consume the other dogs, unless it's just really hungry at that point. And its organism of choice going forward, it would want to pick something that is plentiful across the planet that has low intelligence that people wouldn't look at that carefully if it was acting semi-abnormal. And that it doesn't really have much for grooming behaviors or other changes, which, as Sam would love to tell you, would be cattle.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was looking to spread through something, its ideal spread point of something that's prevalent all over the planet that, like, you really wouldn't be that weirded out about seeing in these abnormal areas, that there's a huge amount of biomass that you can just replicate and look like, cattle and dogs would be a great choice.
And, I mean, then you've got flies as a vector.
Yeah.
As, like, a connectivity between populations.
Right. There are lots of other organisms. Because, again, there's a Futurama episode. My partner and I just recently finished all of the Futurama seasons because they all went up on Disney Plus. And they're fighting this mimic creature at one point that's, like, turning into different crew members. And they come over at one point and, like, Bender's hiding. And he's like, oh, stay away from me. I don't want you to get infected by the parasite. And someone's like, Bender, when did you get those ears? And he's like, I've always had ears. And they're like, no, you haven't. And he's like, all right, fine. Fucking sue me. All right. It's really hard to keep all of you creatures apart. All right. I'm going to make little mistakes. And I was thinking about, like, the thing is I'm watching it because, yeah, like,
pretty good.
Facial hair structures, like, humans pay a lot of attention, right? If, like,
yeah,
for our listeners, they don't know, but Adam has quite a beard. If he got up one morning and it was just completely shaved off, it's not like Libby would just be like, oh, nothing's changed. She'd be like, why did that happen?
Oh my god, I'm dating a child.
Right, and that would take a lot of energy for a replicating organism to not only are you picking up memories, not only are you picking up, like, basic structure, but you're also having to get age-associated change, you're having to get differences that we've individualized in terms of how we want to look. It's a lot easier to just replicate a dog. I mean, I hate to admit it, but if one of my cats came in this morning and had a slightly different color of its orange coat or a spot in the wrong place, I definitely would not notice.
Yeah, it would take a bit longer for sure.
You're a bad owner. Yeah. Just like a fucking, I don't know, a magpie, urban birds. Like, we don't notice, like, difference in coloration there at all.
No.
Not unless you're one of those crazy birders in there.
There are fantastic source of citizen science. Do not diss those people. Community science, I should say. The birders are like...
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, and herpers as well are becoming more and more...
Got a few of those here.
Herping's great.
What do you call it when you do it with damselflies and dragonflies, Adam?
I was about to bring that up. This was something that I'd heard. I've only heard it once in my life, and I really disagree with it, where there was a guy, a postdoc in our lab, who was, like me, really enjoyed catching odonates and taking pictures of them, so dragonflies and damselflies. Mm-hmm. And the group, the dragonflies and damselflies, is called odonates, so people call them odors.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is terrible.
Odors.
Odors.
I think, no, just call me bug guy.
I feel like odonators.
That bug guy.
Yeah. I feel like odonators would be even better. It's like a...
I like odonators.
Odonationalists.
Odonationalists.
So, Libby, did you feel that extra scientific explanation or discussion would have added to this film? Because I don't imagine the film would have done very well if the dog had just stayed quiet, waited until it got back to humankind, and then the movie was just the dog slightly spreading through the other population as humans were like, dog looks a little bit weird this morning. I don't think I would have watched that film.
Huh. Yeah. Funnily enough, this film did not do well when it was released in theaters.
Really?
In 82. It was kind of met with a big criticism.
Oh.
Was it too gross?
Huh?
Was it too gross?
No, it just essentially just got bad movie reviews. They said it was trash, a trash movie. They did praise the effect, like special effects.
To this day.
But that was the only real praise that it got until they released it to home video, and that's where it found its cult following with audiences.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, for me personally, I thought the science was well balanced in this movie. You have the desolation of the Arctic, so you feel that sense of being trapped and being helpless, but you have, this team that is, educated enough to sort of make these scientific deductions about what the hell is going on with them. So I thought it was a really good setup for that story.
Yeah, sure. they're all research scientists. And for those of you that don't know, if you're the only stable population in Antarctica are researchers from around the world doing very specific research on that continent. So them and then Metallica when they came there to do a show, so they can say that they did a show on all seven continents.
Right, I forgot about that.
And I think it captures the paranoia really well. So I had a professor that I worked with that was lectured by. This is when I was a bachelor, so yeah, I wasn't doing any work. Doesn't matter. Anyway, her name was Professor Kath Handaside. She's a fascinating speaker. She's retired now, but incredible woman. And she worked in Antarctica for a time. And she was telling us about the fact that because you're spending so much time with a small group of people, you get to know kind of every aspect of them really well. And everyone has to really fit in together. And there was this person who had been dropped off by whatever form of transport they'd taken. And they could see them, you know, walking with one of the other people from a massive distance. And they could tell who was who just based on the way they walked, because they'd been spending so much time together watching each other from distances. And she said that when this, every now and then you'd have a new person come in who just did not mesh with the rest of the people working there. And it really threw everything out of balance. Like, it was a huge disruption. People wouldn't like each other, wouldn't trust each other for a time just because there's one person upsetting the flow there. And I think that, like, the paranoia that, you know, the slow crumble of, you know, this kind of
the trust of the team.
Work area is, yeah, the lack of trust is really kind of, it's incredibly haunting.
I mean, it's already a very, like Sam was saying, a very strenuous position to be in. And I think the only recorded murder that's happened in Antarctica was at one of these research stations. It was a Russian station. And these two guys have been bunking together for a long time. And the one just decided he didn't like the other one, or that something happened between them. But whenever one of them would start to watch a movie, the other guy would wait a little bit and then spoil the movie. And he did this over and over and over. And the guy finally killed him just because it was such a... You're with this person for so long, and that's all you have. And you have this one, like, enjoyment, and the other guy is taking it. And all that high stress and the isolation just stacked on top of him. And it leads to that kind of situation. And having that with this horrifying monster that will just completely destroy you and remove all of your identity is making it even worse. And it's a great, great movie.
The creature was right behind me! I don't know where it went!
Hey, just leave me alone! I'm really, really scared!
Bender?
What?
Where'd you get those ears?
I've always had ears.
No, you haven't.
All right, fine, you got me. I can't keep track of every little detail.
All right, well, I think, is that more or less it for now?
Yeah.
I think as far as that goes, obviously we have opinions on all these different parasites, and I think we can wait to do some kind of ranking on them, but I do have a question for the Baroness.
Yeah.
As far as, I think I have thoughts on why this is, but what do you think makes parasites and these kind of monsters so good, and why do we enjoy them so much as a movie monster?
Oh man, I think parasites are great because it just automatically, even the word parasite kind of gives you that little like ooh, like feeling. You know, whenever you think about a parasite, no one in the world is like, ooh yeah, like sign me up for that. It's like, get away from me, that's gross. Yeah, except for Adam. Excuse me, Dr. Adam.
Thank you.
He's training me already. So I think parasites make a fantastic movie monster just because it is so unsettling and unnerving to think about something of that nature, whether it's a virus or an actual worm-like organism burrowing in your skin. It's just ugh, gross.
Now, one last question before we sign off. Is the family from Parasite a family of parasites? How close are they to actually being a parasite?
They're absolutely a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
They live in the rich family's house. They are taking the rich family's food, and they're making their way in and just ingratiating themselves, but then taking resources from them without returning anything to them, because except for...
Services rendered, right?
It was a tutor?
Yeah.
Huh?
But they are performing services.
They are, but they're not qualified to do them, and they're not doing as good a job as they could.
Okay.
But... So, okay, I'm thinking of the other family. So that family, maybe a quasi, like a cheating mutualist situation. But you have the other family that lives in the basement, in that bunker.
I see what you mean. Yeah,
and they are parasites.
The dad at the end is very much the parasite, stealing food, mm-hmm. but also trying to be minimally invasive, watching his steps, and then returning to his little cave area as he gets electricity and resources and everything else.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. What are we? We're coming back to do The Gray next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in like 10 years. I'm excited.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever watched the whole thing from start to finish, so I'm also very much looking forward to this. And goddamn, do we all have some thoughts about wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, yeah.
And I think we can safely say as well, just in our normal, we would probably recommend that you see all of these films that we've talked about today.
Absolutely.
Perhaps Venom least so, because I don't think...
Yeah.
But all the others are incredible, yeah.
Yeah. Adam, do you want to sign us off?
Absolutely. So say here at the end of every episode, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye-bye.
Says the doctor.
Bye, guys.
Doctor. I'm a doctor.
Hi.
You should be extremely afraid. What the hell are you?